I don't think you're giving us our due credit. Our scientists have done things which nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could that they didn't stop to think if they should.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Movie Calendar. My name is Lee.
And my name is Terrence.
And this week, we're going to be talking all about Steven Spielberg's incredible early 90s adventure icon, Jurassic Park. Absolutely incredible to be talking about this film. The first Spielberg movie to go on the calendar, probably the first of a few, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And if it sounds a little bit strange this week as to what it normally does, I'll address that straight off the bat before I say welcome back to Terrence because he wasn't here last week. I have moved house, you wouldn't think it, because the setup looks exactly the same behind me. I managed to recreate it for the most part. There's a few things that are probably missing in the same spot for the eagle-eyed viewers on YouTube at home, but the normal recording equipment that I have here at my home with the microphone that is in front of me here, unfortunately the adapter that goes into the recording device I can't find at the moment, so it's somewhere in a box, and so apologies if the audio sounds a little bit different.
It happens. Things get lost. At least you got your show.
Don't say it's lost.
I mean, things get misplaced, and it'll turn up. It'll turn up when you're not looking for it. A few weeks down the track, we'll do a few more episodes. Audio will be rubbish. People will turn off. Then you'll find it. We'll get a new audience listener base. It'll be fine.
It's all part of the big movie calendar plan so far.
Yeah.
But no, I will. If I haven't found it by next week, I will buy another one. It's fine. It's only an adapter. So, So because of that fact, because the microphone and the mixer isn't actually plugged in to my recording device, I don't need the headphones, so I'm just going to take them off for those people watching on YouTube. I don't actually need those. They were more for aesthetic purposes than anything, so they're gone.
Great. Now, how are we going to do supercuts and edits? You look so different now.
I know. Continuity is a problem, and I do apologize.
Oh, look, and I'm not wearing a black T-shirt. I'm wearing a different t-shirt.
You've had a week off and you're a whole new man. What is with this new look? Different. I like it.
You will see it all in good time if I remember to stand up and show the world what is on my shirt, the relevance.
A special surprise for the episode that is Jurassic Park.
Yes.
But before we get into that, welcome back, Terrence.
Thank you.
You weren't here last week. We had my friend, roommate, and fellow film lover, Jenny, fill in.
Thank you, Jenny, for doing that.
Big thank you.
Really cool episode. Really tricky to do as well, to get yourself out there in voice and in video. So, well done. Great job. It was a very enjoyable listen. So brought some very nice insights that I definitely wouldn't have been able to bring to the film. I think I would have been just like you, Leah, and a person who has no idea of a different culture to what you're brought up in, and then this totally different view to the way society should act when a family is thrust into this situation. So it was pretty fitting that that Jenny was able to sit in there.
Yeah, pretty much a blessing in disguise, really, because I learned so much. The episode last week was The Farewell. If you haven't seen that, please go and check out that movie. It's just wonderful. And then our episode straight after would be fantastic. It's such a sweet movie. Not every movie has to be this deep, heavy, meaningful, makes you think film. Sometimes you can just have a good time, and that's what we're going to do today. Yeah. That is exactly what Jurassic Park is. It is just an adventure.
Yeah.
And it does cool, that fun probably film. Better than almost any other adventure film out there. Spielberg is an absolute master of this, and I can't wait to dive into it.
I was really kind of excited to watch this again when we kind of decided a few weeks ago we would include this on the calendar. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to watch it with the kids. They're still in primary school, and as it got closer, I was telling a few people, yeah, I'm going to watch it. I'm telling Lee, yeah, watch it. And everyone's saying, no, but maybe you shouldn't. And I'm glad I heeded all of your advices. Yeah, I didn't. And it would have been way too much for him. But all in good time. This is a film that they need to see.
Oh, absolutely.
Just for so many reasons. Man, technologically, in terms of when this thing was made. But just a really enjoyable film. It was cool to go back to the film. I like when we do these older films. It's really cool. Yeah.
older, 1993. Wait till we start hitting the 70s and 60s and sometimes even earlier. I've got a couple of quite early films I'd love to put on the calendar. No spoilers yet, but there are some early pieces of cinema that will definitely make a spot on. There's some really sweet pieces as well.
All right, cool. Sweet as in sweet, or sweet as in, oh, sweet. Doesn't matter, both.
Don't
both are
know
welcome.
The difference between what you just did, that I'm slightly terrified and yet aroused at the same time. I don't know how you were able to do that. Well done.
Now that I know that, I will never say that ever again to you.
And my plan is working, ladies and gentlemen. We are seeing it right here and now. So,
good. Time to move on.
If it is your first time here, welcome. Thank you for stopping on in. It's going to be a really cool episode. We know that this is a massive film that has a huge fan base, and for an incredible reason, because it is just such an endearing film and one that has stood the test of time. There will be time codes in the description below, whether you're watching us on YouTube or listening on your favorite podcast app of choice. We have some regular scheduled programming in here that you can contribute to as well. Best way to do that is to follow us on Twitter and Instagram to see those. We have sections called What About When? As well as adding the films to the calendar themselves. Mm-hmm. We would like some input in the future. So jump on those socials, jump on our website, themoviecalendar.com. We have an email address as well. If you'd like to give us some feedback, we would absolutely love that. That is themoviecal@gmail.com. And with that out of the way, Terrence, are you ready to jump in?
I am. I will. Look, I'll start by giving a little disclaimer that I have seen through the years many, many not documentaries, but little filmography. What do you call the film? Little featurettes. Little featurettes through the years. Not that I can remember too many of them, but lots of talk over the time of, this might not be accurate and this time period isn't represented correctly and this and this and this. That's not what we're going to do. We're not going to pick it apart like that. We're just going to chat about the cool things that happen in this, pretty much. I've got so many quotes. I'm not going to list them all, but I want to throw them in where we can. This is
such a quotable movie.
Our second Sam Neill film.
Which I was going to mention that.
Super,
you beat me
super
to
cool.
It.
I think when we spoke about Hunt for the Wilder People, you spoke about his reaction. He's the king of the reaction shot, and this
so
is his reaction shot film. If there's ever one, what better reaction than, oh man, there's a real life dinosaur standing in front of me, and I just
so good.
I just caught. Okay, if you're near the internet right now, you need to Google crane fly, as in C-R-A-N-E, like what you build buildings with, crane fly. I have one flying next to me. These are massive mosquito-looking flies, like from the Jurassic period. Am I right? It's been flying around my lights. It's quite warm right now, so it's being attracted to the lights, and it just caught my eye.
We've got a celebrity cameo of the crane fly this week on Terrence's YouTube side. If you're here, keep an eye out for that.
No.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
They're harmless.
We'll kick on. It's a harmless, harmless insect. That's fine. From the Jurassic period. But yeah, no. The entire series of the movie calendar is a celebration of cinema. So that's what we're here to do today. So we've got Jurassic Park, directed by Steven Spielberg, as we said a little bit earlier, the first Spielberg film to drop on the calendar, and a worthy addition it certainly is, based off the novel by Michael Crichton, who also helped with the screenplay as well, starring Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum, and Richard Attenborough. Such an incredible cast, wonderful, wonderful cast of characters as well, so endearing and well-developed. Everything that they say and do is just a marvel to behold, which is saying a lot considering the actual star of this film is the dinosaurs themselves.
Yeah, and the Samuel L. Jackson role, like I was really surprised to see him in this film. Watching it again, I totally forgot that he was in it. Totally forgot. And Wayne Knight, of course, key role. Key player to this. I just like that Sam Jackson was in this and he didn't drop an F-bomb. That was
pretty
cool.
Well, this film is rated in Australia like PG, which is That's up for debate because this movie has some horrific moments in it. Yeah, but there's a version of this movie that's kid friendly if you edit it in the right way. If you take out all of those scary bits, there's so much fun and adventure and joy, and then it just goes into a full blown horror film.
Yeah, yeah.
Towards the end,
it's Alien in Hawaii.
Yeah,
that's what this is, right? I was going to say with Sam Jackson, he is so angry in this film. That was why I couldn't believe he didn't drop an F-bomb. He is, all he is angry at Nedry.
Yeah.
Just keep waiting for him to swear. All right. Yes. Cool.
Yeah. Well, this came out a year before, it would have been a year before Pulp Fiction when he kind of hit the stratosphere and became the iconic, you know, Samuel L. Jackson that we know and love.
Maybe Tarantino saw something in this film and went, I can turn this even better.
Well, actually, I've got a few cool facts about that, but I might save them for the Pulp Fiction episode because we're going to do one at some point.
We're going to do Pulp Fiction. We'll do it. It'll come.
Pulp Fiction's actually coming up quite soon, so make sure you subscribe here on YouTube and on your podcast app of choice for that one. Because that'll be coming down the pike very soon. I was going to do like the plot summary of Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
But do I really have to? It's Jurassic Park. Like you have seen this film. Everybody has seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no point in going to a plot summary. You know what this movie is about. Even if you haven't seen the film, it has been parodied to death. Like, you know what this movie is about. So I'm going to skip that. You can look it up on IMDb if you like. It's just a marvelous piece of cinema.
All right, where are we going from here? What should we start with?
I want to jump in and talk about some of these eclectic characters that we're introduced to in quite rapid succession. It's so efficient, this film, at jumping in and meeting Dr. Grant and Sattler, where they're at the dig site, digging up some bones. And little do they know in their small worlds that it's about to be blown apart by a wondrous adventure. Such excellent character development from everyone in this movie. Like, the writing is just so well done. There's so many little moments that kind of pinpoint character development in a way that's organic, and it's through actions rather than through dialogue, which is really nice. I know that we've got a What About When from Instagram. Especially with Dr. Grant, with a mm-hmm. moment that we'll touch on a little bit later in the helicopter. But yeah, there's so many cool moments where, like, you know that he doesn't love kids, but Ellie does. And I love that they're like an ambiguous couple as well.
Yeah.
Like, are they together? Are they not?
Yeah.
And he kind of says that they are, but she's, you know, flirting with Malcolm. And yeah, it's an interesting set of characters to lead us into the movie.
Do you reckon she's flirting with him? I think she's kind of just playing his game, playing along with his stupidity, like almost eye rolling at him.
Possibly.
I don't think she's flirting. I think she's like, oh my God, is this guy for real?
And if she is, then that's her prerogative. And she wants to do that. No, fantastic.
That's how I read it. And I'm like, yeah, perfect. Yeah. Good. You see through his macho bullcrap.
I genuinely love the ambiguity of their relationships. Yeah. Like, you don't need, like, if those two sort of our main characters, Grant and Sattler, had have kissed, I think the movie would have been so far less than what it is. Like, that you don't need that in a movie of this scale. Like, it's not about that. This movie is about dinosaurs.
That's it. Often when they take the time to show a couple in an embrace or a kiss or something, it's now part of the story. That you're right, that didn't need to be shown at all.
No,
and kept ambiguous
on purpose.
It's not
necessary. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, definitely. I think with a lot of films try to replicate the Jurassic Park formula of having, you know, and I've even fallen into the trap of it here during this episode of saying that this movie is about the dinosaurs. Like, whilst yes, that's true, it can't just be that. Like, they have to be in service of our human characters. There's a lot of films that you can look at that have, you know, like big monsters and spectacle, but unless the human characters are interesting, you don't care. Like, there's no point. I'd throw a few examples out, but I don't want to step on too many toes, but I will. There's a 2014 remake of Godzilla. where like Godzilla is amazing, but like our human characters are just so boring. Same with almost every Transformers movie. Like there's nothing interesting about any of the characters in there. It's just pure spectacle. Whereas this one has the perfect balance of both human and spectacle. And it's a reason why it's a classic.
Yeah, it gives a really look. The dinosaurs become a catalyst for humanity's existence. Did that sound right? I don't know. For a better understanding of the power that we wield and why we shouldn't abuse it, you know. Unfortunately, it was done in the most gargantuan efforts known. But yeah, absolutely that. Technology running away with us. Let's not lose sight of the bigger picture. And Jeff Goldblum's character through the whole thing just is that kind of narrative all throughout, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's wonderful. He is, I think this is the film where he is just peak Goldblum.
I can't, you know, I don't know if it's a meme or whatever, but where he's injured and he's lying half shirt off and everything, I was watching it thinking, oh, is this the movie that's from?
Yeah.
I would be in this film where he is just so sexily draped over some some steelwork. I don't even know. But I couldn't believe it.
Injured. He's laying on like a gurney or something or some sort of metal bench and he's just... Yeah.
Half the film he's injured. Half the film he's lying on his back. But my still favorite, spouting these one-liners.
My favourite meme, and if I can find it to send Terrence in time, he might pop it up on the screen if you're watching on YouTube, of that is when... You know when Dr. Grant is leaning against the Triceratops? When it's sick and it's breathing him up and down, someone's photoshopped him like really small doing that on Jeff Goldblum's chest.
Oh no, that ruins it.
Oh no, it's so funny. You have to see it.
Well, because I wrote down, you know, how nice it was when you see, like, you see total joy in Dr. Grant, in that Sam Neill brings this out, that he is just so taken by these dinosaurs that have been brought back to life. And that moment when he's on the belly of that Triceratops, he has this smile. He's just so content. It's like, this is it. His life could end and he would be a happy man. That was what I thought when I saw that scene. I've just felt really, really nice for his character. And now you have gone and done that to me.
It was the internet. It wasn't me.
You're the one that told me about it. I didn't know about that.
It's so funny. We'll put it up. It's genuinely hilarious. It's so perfectly well made.
All right.
Another really good point about his character is that he loves what he does.
Mm.
Testament to Sam Neill's performance to be able to kind of convey that passion for paleontology, because you know he's not a paleontologist. He's an actor and just a genuinely lovely human being.
Mm.
He's just got this such childlike wonder and passion inside him, and you just, there's something about people who have that you just latch to. Mm. You feel it in every moment that he's in, like when he escapes from the ride that is Jurassic Park to go and have a look at the eggs, because it's going through when he sees the scientists, and then he has so many questions, so he literally breaks out to go and see one of the dinosaurs get born out of the egg. It's just so cute.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? He brings to paleontology, he brings a side that I never thought possible.
Archaeology?
No. Paleontology is the study of dinosaurs. Archaeology is another study of digging for historical things, right. I think, just in general. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. But paleontology specifically for dinosaurs. The only other paleontologist I know who I know everything from and have learned everything from is Ross from Friends. So, you know, Sam Neill really brought that and just gave me a different... Oh, I'm an idiot.
No, you're not. No, that's good. I think... that's too funny. He leaves Ross in the dust. I'm sorry for all of the Ross stands out there who love him, but no, yeah, he makes Ross an extinct relic of the past.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A bumbling one. All right. We'll move on because we can keep talking about Grant.
We'll touch on
as we go through. Laura Dern, Ellie.
Oh, queen. Such a queen. I love her.
Yeah.
I love the confidence that she has within herself. One of my favorite quotes in the entire film, of a film that is just full of incredible quotes, which we're going to get to that in a second. We're going to do a quote section.
I'll do this one just now.
Just for Terrence. But I'm going to do this one now. And it's when Jeff Goldblum's Malcolm is listing off all of the things.
Do
and he's
it.
Going, God creates dinosaurs. God destroys dinosaurs. God creates man. Man destroys God. Man creates dinosaurs. And Laura Dern jumps in. Dinosaurs eat man. Woman inherits the earth. And it's just one of my favorite quotes in the entire film.
You know, the best...
Perfectly encapsulates her character.
Oh, it's so good. And, you know, the best thing about that quote, the next best thing about the quote than the quote itself, is the look that both Malcolm and Dr. Grant's characters have, because the focus shifts to Ellie. She's in the foreground. And then after she delivers that line and just continues to stare out the window, she sits back and you see Malcolm
smiles.
Look in nearly disbelief, like, how dare you? And Dr. Grant in the background going, that's my girl.
Yeah good, exactly.
A beautiful smile. What it's like. And it's just, I thought that was priceless. That's my first quote, my biggest quote that I have written. That is a classic line. I love it.
It's so good. I've got a few others that sort of jump ahead that I actually use in my everyday life.
Really?
Constantly from this film, which I'll get into in a bit. But no, I love Ellie. She's such a wonderful character. I love her relationship with Dr. Grant. You can tell how much she cares about him, mm-hmm. or how much they care about each other.
Yeah.
And
about what they do.
Yeah, it's nice.
You know, they share this passion. Yeah. And it's at equal levels, and they respect each other at that professional level so much that they'll follow each other to the ends of the earth. And, you know, I like that I think in one of the first scenes when they're in one of the vehicles driving and she's holding a leaf and she's studying the leaf and talking about how it shouldn't be here and unbelievable how old this leaf is and everything. And I think the way that it's written, I guess Crichton has put a lot into the novel, but putting a lot of that detail in, which I'm assuming is all correct in terms of, you know, biologically how she talks about every plant that is spoken about, that they don't skimp on that detail, and she delivers it really well. It's not really labored. You know, the character isn't just saying it to seem like she knows what she's on about.
She's genuinely fascinated with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really
genuine. You said a really good word just before when describing her and Dr. Grant was equals, and how they respect each other. Like, they are absolutely equals in this film, and she does not fall into the trap of damsel in distress, because this film, literally everybody is in distress. Like, it's freaking dinosaurs, man. They're getting chased by raptors. Like, it's the sexuality and gender have nothing to do with this film, like no bearing on it whatsoever. Like, everybody is in danger.
Well, it's funny you say that, because between the two of these characters, there is no distinction between gender roles or anything. However, it definitely comes from it comes from Jeff Goldblum's character. It even comes from Hammond himself.
Especially, you know, Hammond,
you're a woman, I should go, because you're a, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm a what?
Yeah, exactly. Obviously I'd seen it before, and watching it again, I was thinking, I forgot this bit. What is he saying?
I thought the exact same thing.
Are you serious? You're a woman? And then I think, okay, it was written in 93. All right, characters. Yeah. He's an old man, I guess. Yeah, all right. It's a thing. Yeah.
You could literally swap the genders of those two lead characters, and it would not change the film at all.
No.
Like, not even a little bit.
No.
It's so wonderful to see.
Yeah, and that's actually why I think she was not flirting with Malcolm, with Goldblum's character, because he was so stupidly patronizing to her for being a woman. you know, you're not going to flirt after that. Like the butterfly effect, let me explain it to you slowly. Like, oh man, yeah. I was wanting her to punch him in the face. Not anywhere that it would cause any, you know, misshapenness of his beautiful face, but just for the film.
Actually, thinking about it now, how much fun would it have been to have that water droplet scene with Goldblum and Sam Neill? That would have been so great.
Why not?
If you reverse the roles, that would have been marvelous.
And where he runs his hand down the back of his wrist and talks about the... I don't know, it was so creepy for me watching it. And anyway, we know.
Yeah.
But he plays that creepy guy quite well.
yeah, he's also like super smart and charismatic for a character, but yeah, just all of his like ahs and ooh ah e pauses between his sentences are just
that's his thing,
peak, absolute peak Goldblum.
I love him in everything that he's in. I say that about so many films that we talk about here, but I really do. He's got a series out on some channel as well where he talks about his fascination with shoes and things as well.
Disney Plus, yeah.
Is it?
The Life According to Jeff Goldblum or something.
Oh, it's pretty cool. It's a little fun little project. He looks like he's involved with pretty heavily, but you see a lot of him. He's such an intellectual as well. But real...
Knows a lot.
Really cool to watch him.
He's a really good musician too.
Really?
Yeah, he's a jazz musician. Quite a good one at that.
Nice. I like a bit of jazz.
I really like and some films, this will kind of make it or break it for me, because there's good versions of this and there's really, really bad versions. There's no kind of middle ground. It's introducing children into the film.
Yeah.
And this one does it in such a good way. I think these kids Lex and
Tim.
Are just wonderful, and they help raise the stakes, and those characters as well are well developed. They're not just there just for sort of cannon fodder or to be like, oh no, we're going to just build the tension. Like, they are actually human beings as well, which is nice, and good performances from them as well. So yeah, all round just excellent work.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. The performances these kids put in, I think especially Lex,
yes,
she had just fear on her face for the whole, you know, 90 minutes that, what, 70 minutes that she was in the film. That I'm nearly thinking, okay, she had to do a lot of screaming. I'm thinking, oh, that poor thing, she was just petrified for the entire shooting of this film. The only time where she got to relax was right at the very, very beginning. When it was all fun and this is a cool park that our granddad has taken us to. And when they finally get back into the main center and they're in the dining room and they're eating and they glance at each other in calm happiness. And they're like, oh.
For like two seconds.
For 2 seconds. And then her face changes again, the poor thing. I'm like, oh, man.
Shaking the jelly on the spoon.
You know, Spielberg is the king of, you've said it and I've related to it in another episode about something you said about the put it in early and you have to talk about it later.
Chekhov's gun.
Chekhov's gun. Man, everything is Chekhov's gun in Spielberg's films. Everything. And it's not a didactic approach in terms of the storytelling, but his technique is where, you know, okay, we have to, here's the claw of the raptor. The jelly in the shot of the plate that she's eating was, you know, she's eating all these vegetables and healthy things, but there's this tub of green jelly there for some reason. What? Oh, because we have to shake it. So
yeah.
I think, you know, that's where for me, a Spielberg film is immediately a film I'm just going to enjoy. I'm going to enjoy it. It's going to take me on a ride. And I don't think that I feel too challenged in terms of a viewer when I watch a Spielberg film, apart from the concept of the story. Because he takes me along. He holds my hand and takes me where I need to go. Is that a bad way to say it?
No, not at all. I think a really good thing about Spielberg is he does that. Like, you've got this and Jaws and E.T. and like Close Encounters. Like, they're huge spectacle films, but you know, they all have something to say, but not so much in a huge way. But then he can also do his Schindler's Lists, like this, which he made at the same time as making Jurassic Park, or like back to back. Like, he made these films, they were like overlapped each other, Jurassic Park and Schindler's List, which is just
really
insanity that he was able to do that. He is such a good filmmaker.
Jeez.
But yeah, so he can absolutely do it, do it all. Or could. I don't want to rag on the director.
No, but rag on him.
Some of his newer stuff hasn't been all that fantastic, but you never take your eye off him, because he could still have some magic left, and I can't wait to see what he does with some upcoming projects.
It's always an enjoyable thing watching one of his films. E.T. was my very first, maybe my second film that I saw in a cinema. But I saw E.T. when I was 5. Does that give away my age? I was very little.
Probably.
I got taken to the movies. You know, E.T. and The Dark Crystal.
Oh, wow.
They're the two first feature films I saw, and I can't remember which was first.
Yeah. The first film that I saw in a theater, I was taken by my grandmother. I saw The Lion King.
Oh.
Which was just incredible. And I grew up in a small town. Like, there wasn't a theater. We had to drive. Wow. You know, drive to a completely different town to go and see a movie, and I remember that experience. I remember the logo coming up, and the music, obviously, at the start. It was just gorgeous.
Ah, first feature film to be an animation, or first cinema film to be an animation. Both. Beautiful. Yeah. Now I know amazing. Where your love of animations come from.
Have you seen? Oh yeah, gosh, let's not dive too deep into that, because there's probably some deep seated things in there. No, I do love animation. I think it's wonderful cinema when it's done at the peak of what it can be. Have you seen Jurassic Park in a cinema?
That was where I saw it first.
Oh, incredible. Yeah. So I didn't. I was too young.
I was also young, but I did see it in cinema.
Yeah, no, I wasn't even born yet. What am I? I'm turning into Jeff Goldblum. I think you'll find. Well, but no, I saw this film. They were doing a re-release of it in cinemas, which they do all the time for classics like this. I saw it in my early 20s, and if people listening or watching to this who have seen the movie, but, you know, of a certain age, maybe a little bit younger, who haven't had the opportunity to see this movie in a cinema, seek it out, when we're able to go back to cinemas again. But if it is showing in a cinema near you, go and see it. This movie is incredible. If you're worried about the effects not holding up, do not for even a second. Like, the practical and visual effects, like, coming together in this film is so perfectly well done. It's right at that nexus point where visual effects were starting to become a thing, but they were only used very sporadically on top of practical effects, and Spielberg was an absolute master at blending these together, and when you see it in the cinema, it holds up so well.
The animatronics, obviously the T-Rex, I think most people know, and if you don't, that was a physical, real thing on set. That was a full robot. I guess the Brachiosaurus as well, when they're in the tree and they're feeding the Brachiosaurus. But when Dr. Grant is running with Tim and Lex through the fields, through this school of dinosaurs that are running, and he talks about how they're turning like a flock of birds avoiding prey. They're all CGI. They're all CGI. And the way that they composite the real life characters in the same frame running, I think that was why they could do it so well, this running scene. You know, you've got natural blur anyway with the frame rate of film. So that offered a little bit of flexibility with compositing these CGI characters into real world, so you don't have pixelated edges and things like that. But
yeah.
I think that was just, you know, that I'm not going into what about when's, but that scene just blew me away. I was a teenager when I watched it. Okay, so I'd heard of computer animation, but had never experienced it to where I knew it could be done like that. It just blew me away.
You would have been right in the sweet spot for like the target audience for this film when it came out as well. Like it would have been huge.
Yeah, it was made for me.
Yeah,
I'm surprised it's not my favorite film of all time.
It says it in the credits for Terrence.
For Terrence underneath. At the end, after the credits roll.
But no, it's just perfect. This movie is absolutely wonderful. We would be remiss talking about this film without mentioning the incredible John Williams, because the score to this film is just like it's just showing off, really, from John Williams. And I'm probably going to say that a lot with every movie I talk about that he has done the score for. We haven't talked about any Star Wars or Harry Potter yet, which I'm sure we will. But like the pretty much all of my What About Whens are musical moments in this film.
Oh, tell people, because you know I'm not sure of our audience base how many people will know John Williams or what he does. Rattle off a couple of films that we have in our heads as soundtracks to our life. Go.
Well, every Star Wars movie that has ever been released, ever. Superman, Harry Potter, and putting me on the spot too, by the way. This is not good.
Superman, Harry Potter, Star Wars, Jaws. I mean, like, Jaws? Did he do
Jurassic Park, Jaws. Yeah, he did Jaws.
Jurassic Park.
He's been around for a long time.
That's only five tiny, tiny indie films. Yeah, you hear him everywhere. And we were talking just before we started recording, as we do, and I didn't even think about it like this, but when you hum the theme tunes, I always get theme tunes mixed up with everything, but we started humming it. And then the another piece of music that he writes for it, so there's the music when, like, the opening titles. But is that one of your What About Whens that we're talking about? I don't want
to get it. It is, yeah. Look, if you would like to, because we're trying to keep it a little bit tighter, would you like to do our world famous segment and jump on in before we do our quotes and then add it to the movie calendar?
Yeah, all right.
Of What About When?
Let's do it. Well, should we continue with that What About When? Because we're on the
John Williams theme. Yeah, so we'll jump straight in. So we're here at What About When, episode 17, Jurassic Park. I'm going to do one and then we'll go to Instagram. But I've got a What About When that leads into the discussion that we were just having about John Williams.
Yeah,
and it's like hashtag What About When the chopper is first flying to the island. And we get our first listen to that John Williams excellence that is about to take us into a journey of wonder and mystery and adventure.
Mm.
It's so good.
Yeah. Hum it. Go.
Now, because I don't have my microphone plugged in this week, that probably sounded horrible and off pitch, but I can guarantee you, if you were in the room right now, you would be crying at how beautiful that sounded.
Wow. Whenever I cue you to sing, I actually have a button here that turns off my headphones.
That's probably very smart. I'm sick
of the bleeding out of my eardrums. And if you were in my room, you would have heard that I was totally on key. And then the music changes when you see the brachiosaur for the first time, right? The brachiosaurus.
Yep. You're going to make me do it again straight away?
Yep.
All right, well, I literally have hashtag What About When we see the dinosaurs for the first time. You get that amazing expression on Dr. Grant's face as he lifts up Ellie and he stands up in the jeep and
he's like, get up here.
It's they do move in herds. Da 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 da
da. Sorry, we're ruining it for everyone.
Yeah. But no one will ever watch Jurassic Park or an episode of the movie calendar again because they're just ruined.
We're going to tell how good we were at singing it if YouTube flag it. And if it, picked up...
You know what you should do is you should, like, very lightly put the theme, like, behind our voices.
No, so it'll get picked up.
Like, it's a little bit better.
It'll get picked up. We'll get some violation warning or something.
We won't do that.
So, all right, that's two What About Wens, when we first see the dinosaurs, right. And then the... All right, cool. Let's go to...
both musical ones for me. That was my last musical one. Well,
beautiful.
We've got a What About When or a couple, I hear, from Instagram.
Two from Instagram here. So we have...
Awesome. So if you would like to contribute to What About When, please follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Are the best places to contribute to those. We are at The Movie Cal. You can email it to us as well. We are themoviecal@gmail.com. Links to all of these in the description below and also on our website, themoviecalendar.com.
Yes, and hashtag what about when, and I'm going to do this because I'm uber cool. That's a hashtag. I just did two.
Moving right along.
I just did a cool... Lee, what are you embarrassed about? Come back.
I'm very glad that most of our audienceship is audio format only.
Yeah, okay, so let's go on to first What About When from Instagram. This is from Chris Animations. Hello, Chris.
Chris contributed to our Inside Out episode.
Yes, he did. And Chris says, what about when Dr. Grant can't get his seatbelt on in the helicopter? He uses two same-ended buckles. So doesn't that mean the person next to him also can't get theirs on? Come on, Spielberg. Just kidding. Best movie ever.
Yeah, I agree. Best movie ever too, by the way.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. That is such a good character-driven moment where, like, you get to see, like, the quirkiness and fumbleness of Dr. Grant, but then also he shows, I've completely lost the word. It's escaped from me. Ingenuity.
Yeah.
And he can think on his feet. Like, it's such a really nice character beat and a really subtle one. Kind of tell who he is.
It's good. He's a technophobe, which we learn in the opening scene when he goes near the monitor. And what is it? They've got a cardboard shade over the monitor from when they drop the depth charge in or whatever. And I think he touches the cardboard and static and comes up. It's like, what is going on? Yeah. So it's not really technology, a seatbelt. But Chris's observation here is that he uses two of the same ends. So
he does.
Does this show that he doesn't care about the safety of his fellow man?
I don't want to, Chris, I don't want to call you out too much, but the seats on that helicopter were three on each side, so he was just taking the middle seat, which Ellie wasn't sitting in, because there's three on one side and two on the other.
Oh. But if they had the same end, he took one of theirs, and he was doing, like, think about that next time you're on a plane. How can you have two same-ended ones? That's why they didn't work, that's why he had to tie them. See?
I'm not going to explain this to you.
You don't have to. I know.
People are listening and watching at home. They're like, oh, no, he doesn't understand it. I'm not going to explain it to you.
I understand perfectly well. Dr. Grant is a Luddite and he doesn't know how seatbelts work. He sees them as technology and he's scared of it. He looks down and goes, what's this newfangled thing? And he just ties a knot. I like his look of satisfaction. You're like,
Yeah, he figured it out. He got it done.
Me smart. It's a bit...
He got what it needed to be done. Did you want to have another What About When from Instagram?
Is your move on, Terrence? Yes. We have another What About When from Dandy Andy, who says, I think he's actually given us a What About When before as well. I can't remember where. But he says, what about when life finds a way? And there is a beautiful little emoji of a dinosaur in there as well. Yeah, I was gonna write Jeff Goldblum's quote earlier on, but you know what? Life finds a way. It's a what about when? Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I think the quote is actually life finds a way. I think is how it's actually said in the film.
Life finds a way. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's how it is.
Yeah, he's such a
no. That's a
chaos theory. Yeah, right?
It's a great what about when, like, whether it's true or not, like, it's science fiction. Like, it doesn't have to make sense. But, yeah, using the DNA from frogs to clone so that they can sort of fluidly change genders because life does find a way. You can't suppress millions and millions of years of instinct.
Surely they would have had to use that very specific African frog DNA to do that. I don't know.
If they probably did then.
Amphibian experts. Yeah, I know. Silly, as if you would. Human error. All right.
Crossing out Life Finds a Way from my quote list, which we're going to do next.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So that one's done. Do you have a What About When for yourself?
I do. You know, I have so many, but they'll probably come out in the quotes. What about when Lex looks out the window when it's raining very heavily and she notices the goat's gone and she says, "Where's the goat?" Oh. And just as soon as you, in your own head, are thinking, "You idiot, the T-Rex," boom!
Yeah.
There's the goat's leg on the ceiling.
Terrifying. The roof of the car. All you see is like the chain where the goat was just swinging in the wind. Oh, that was cool. So scary.
You know what's scary? It was scary because it was done so well. The shot looking up and you see it come right on top of her and you can imagine it loud and it would scare the hell out of her. But where would the T-Rex have to have been to have dropped it there? Like, not far. I reckon he would have shaken and
ripped it. If you've ever played fetch with a dog, and they like and do that, they like flick it around. Yeah, like my dog often flicks goat legs around my house all the time. So
that's true.
That part was very true. That actually leads beautifully into my What About When, which is what about when the T-Rex attacks the Jeep?
Yep.
Directly after that moment, it is just terrifying. And again, such a perfect use of practical and visual effects, seamlessly blended together in this one. Because whilst, yes, the T-Rex was built and it is a practical animatronic, there are shots, like big wide shots, where it is a full CG creature as well.
Oh, really?
So they blend them so beautifully. There's a couple of really cool facts about that animatronic and how scary it was in real life, just because of how massive it is. And they tested it under so many different conditions, heat and cold, and it worked perfectly, but they'd never used it when it was wet.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they had the fake, when they had the rain going, it got so much heavier than what it was that the hydraulic system that was powering it was failing, and so it kind of started to stutter and shake and operate on its own, which kind of gives it that. There's a couple of scenes where it is sort of shaking, and it's just, it looks like an animal when it does it.
Like
it's
shaking the water off or something.
Yeah, it's purely just the hydraulic system failing because of the extra weight of the water. Yeah.
Wow. Now, it was incredible how they controlled it. Even the, you know, where she has the torch, Lex has the torch shining out the window in the eye, the pupil gets smaller and dilates when it moves out of the, dilates? I know. That was just beautiful how they did it. I really wanted to yell at Lex, "Turn that bloody torch off. Your brother just said turn the torch off. Why didn't you listen to your brother?" You know, there are two things about that scene. Someone at work actually told me this. When the T-Rex kind of comes down onto the top of the car and the mouth smashes the roof of the car in and it falls onto the kids and they're pushing up the glass, apparently on one of those moves, it smashes the glass and it actually breaks away. And the kids were terrified, obviously, and they screaming, and they kept that shot in, and I noticed it. And there is you see this glass crack in half and fall down onto them. I doubt it was glass. It was probably some heavy perspex.
Yeah.
It didn't shatter. It just snapped in half. I couldn't believe it when he told me this, and then I saw it. And yeah, they kept it in because that fear was so real. And yeah,
those kids' screams are just wonderful.
Terrifying.
I think, especially Lex, we spoke about it a little bit before, but I missed jumping in on an opportunity to talk about it, so I'll do it here. During the audition process for the character of Lex, one of the things that to send in the audition tape to Spielberg was, you know, give us your best scream, your best fear scream. And so he was sitting at home, you know, flicking, it would have been VHSs at the time, of just lots of films of kids screaming. Yeah.
Imagine being the neighbors.
And then when this particular actor's one came on, Steven Spielberg's wife was asleep in the other room. And when she screamed, the wife ran out and said, "What's happened to the kids?" And that was part of the reason as to why she was cast, because it was a genuine child fear scream that it woke his partner up in the next room.
You got the job, kid.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, okay, look, as scary as that scene was, you know, one thing that bugged me about that scene, the T-Rex comes out and I can't remember exactly, but the lawyer is in the same car as the kids and he gets freaked out and runs. And then Malcolm and Dr. Grant characters, they're still in the car and they go, oh, why is he running? There was already a bit of noise and like, didn't you see a big dinosaur right in front of you?
Like, and you gotta go, you gotta go.
Like, well, how could they not see it? But then there was another bit.
It was dark and raining.
Yeah, it was okay, all right, they can have that.
They couldn't see through.
Windows are fogged up.
I mean, you had to, like, there was fogged up.
Yeah, but then there was another bit, and it's in that scene where the glass breaks on them, and then it cuts to Grant and Malcolm in the car, and they're both looking. I laughed when I saw this, because if I was looking at something like that, I'd be scared. I'd be petrified myself, and I'd be, like, not know what to do and look like, oh, that's my acting skills there. But it goes to them and they're looking out as if they're trying to focus on a little surfer in a big wave surfing contest. Like, what's going on over there? and then it cuts back to the action in the car. Then it cuts back to them and then they look worried. But while they're looking, what's going on over there? And then Jeff Goldblum like rubs the fog off the window and goes, oh, that's better. Oh, it's a dinosaur. It's just, you got to watch that bit again.
Oh, that's the T-Rex that we were promised to see earlier, but we didn't.
Aren't the kids in that car? I hope they're okay. Yeah, anyway, I had to mention that. That was funny. That was funny for me.
I've got another dinosaur, what about when, but did you have another one?
I had the initial, the very first dinosaur when we see them. That you mentioned with John Williams' score,
oh, yeah, so great.
You go.
I'm not doing the score again.
Do. Okay, you do your next one. Sorry, everyone.
Beautiful. Ow, that is. I've got a hashtag. What about when the raptors get into the kitchen?
Oh yeah, I should have put that one too. Okay, yes. Oh, that whole scene.
It's just. Yeah, like the whole culmination, like you hear so much about these raptors and what they do. And I'm not sure if this moment happens before or after the Muldoon getting taken by the raptor on the side.
I can't remember.
Like, the raptors are so perfectly set up as this like perfect killer that we haven't seen. And then, yeah, all of a sudden they are just everywhere in the park. And it seems like there's just unlimited numbers of them.
I think it happens after. I think it happens after because two of them are in there.
Yeah. And they're there in the kitchen and it's just, it's such a masterclass of suspense from Spielberg and wonderful performances by the two young actors.
It was really good. In scenes like this and films like this, there are a lot of moments where you're like, oh, come on. They would see them. But this was done quite well. There are only a couple of moments like that, but, you know, it's a dinosaur movie. They did a good job of making sure that where the kids moved, the raptors actually weren't looking. You know, it seemed plausible if there were things looking for them that they may not have seen them. And what about the reflection? The scene
was blocked really well.
Yeah, blocked extremely well. But the direction with the kids as well, to be able to get them to go exactly where they needed and look exactly where they would have wanted them to. But when the raptor finally sees Lex down the aisle and she starts charging and just headbutts the reflection. Yeah. That was beautiful. I remember my heart pounding when I was watching this for the first time and how great it was that this thing got tricked by a reflection and that the girl was safe.
Get out of there.
That was brilliant. Oh, I really enjoyed that. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay. What about when that raptor comes up to the little circle in the kitchen and the raptor comes up and you see the eye and then the snout comes up to the circular window in the kitchen and the steam.
The breath
just
so good.
That was anxiety causing. That got me really awesome. Ready for it.
Yeah, awesome. All right. About wins. Thank you, Chris and Dandy Andy.
Chris Animations and Dandy Andy
for your contributions. Yes. We really do appreciate it. If you would like to contribute. We mentioned it right at the beginning. Twitter and Instagram are the best ones to do it. We are, again, at The Movie Cal. Please follow us. would be super useful to help us to get discovered. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe here on YouTube, or if you're listening to your favorite podcast app of choice, the same would be much appreciated. We've got some really cool episodes coming up, coming up soon. So you'll definitely want to be subscribed for that. Before we add the film to the movie calendar, I think it would be a good idea to do a few quotes, our favorite quotes from the film. I've got a bunch written down that we could kind of fly through. The movie is so quotable, and I use the quotes from this film in everyday life, because how could you not? It's just marvelous. Terrence, do you have any favorites to kick us off?
I have a little list as well. I reckon we could almost go one for one with this. I just did a little chuckle because you said you could use them in everyday life. And the very first quote I wrote down was not actually the one you read out before. It was when it's actually made by Gennaro, the lawyer. And it's when they're in the park and they're seated in this theater where they get told the story and they're on this explanatory ride. And the ride turns to one of the labs and you see all the people working in the lab. And he leans forward and whispers in Hammond's ear and he goes, "Are these characters auto-erotica?"
No, there's no animatronics here.
Erotica, what are you on about?
I completely forgot about that line until I watched it again this week. It's so funny.
I love that. That's so quite tongue-in-cheek. It's very cool.
Looking at the quotes I've got written down, I can't believe that I didn't open the episode with "hold on to your butts."
Hold on to your butts? Who says that?
Yeah. Samuel L. Jackson.
In one of the "gotta shut down the system." How many times they shut down the system?
Cigarette hanging out of his mouth. Oh, so yeah, I use that in everyday life.
Really? Okay, cool. I'm going to listen out for that now. All right. "Life Finds a Way" is one that was my next one that I have written down.
Classic. One that I use all the time is "clever girl."
Oh, yes. I wrote that one down too. I've got to be careful how I use that.
Yeah.
I think everyone should be careful how they use it. Yeah, very cool. "Clever girl."
Yes.
And how fitting. Perfect. He knew. He was the one that knew the capabilities and everything.
Make sure if you're using that one that you do have everybody's correct pronouns.
Yeah. Okay. "There are only two raptors, right? Yes, the third one's contained, unless they figure out how to open doors." Cut to a close-up of the door handle opening and the raptor's hands getting off. Yes.
Ugh, getting off terrifying. The door.
Yeah.
I like, "So what are you thinking? We're out of a job. Don't you mean extinct?"
Another Hammond quote. No, not Hammond. Malcolm, Malcolm.
That's all three of them. Each of those three has one of those little bits of dialogue.
Oh, right.
But yeah, Malcolm at the end has the "don't you mean extinct." But that's actually a line taken out of real life where the practical of effects supervisor, whose name I don't have in front of me. I know he's a huge name in the industry, and I'm completely blanking on it at the moment.
Is it Stan Winston? I wrote his name down as a live-action dinosaur effects.
Incredible. Can't believe that we haven't mentioned his name until now. He is incredible. And he went and saw some early visual effects work that was being done, like CGI for the film.
Mm.
And he was asked, "What do you think?" And he said, "I think I'm extinct."
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so that was written into the script because of that moment, which is cool.
Very cool.
What else you got?
I have another one. Okay, it's when they're running to the chopper. Oh no, they're running to the car at the end to get to the chopper.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope we do a Schwarzenegger film. And
we will.
And Dr. Grant runs to the Jeep and he reads, "Mr. Hammond, after careful consideration, I've decided not to endorse your park." And Hammond goes, So have I. Yeah. So that was quite sad. It's like quite a disappointing thing for him, you know. This was his little baby, his toy. I'm like, yeah, okay. This was a bad thing.
I've got one that contains a swear, so block your ears, children.
Oh, no.
That's another one from Malcolm, and it's just that's one big pile of shit.
You know what I like about that shot is they make it as big as he is and they match him in the frame. Like, yeah. Yeah, you are. Yeah, you yeah, are.
Perfect.
I think that's all I wrote in terms of quotes.
I've got four yeah, more, so I'm going to quickly rattle them off.
I have one. Yeah, I so do have one more. You do one and then I'll
this
do.
One. This one is a good one to do now because we're getting to the end of it, so must go faster, must go faster.
That's all right, yeah.
That's the quote.
That must go faster, sorry.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's when he's in the back of the car, right?
Oh, no.
I think it must go faster. We're doing all right.
We're doing really well for time.
That is actually, that's pretty good. Right,
you had one more?
Yes. It's when... just after Grant and Tim climb down out of the tree and the car drops. Man, that one scene, how amazing is that? So many moments of, oh, you just missed. Oh, no, look out. Oh, I just missed. Look out. They get down and quick run. The car lands on top of them. And Tim goes, we're back in the car again. And Grant goes, well, at least we're out of the tree.
So good.
Unbelievable.
I'll save that one to the end. We spared no expense.
Oh, good. How many times does he say that?
Oh, so many, like four or five at least.
Oh, the poor guy. That's all he can do, hey. That's all he can do. He's got so much money. He doesn't know what else to do with it.
Throws money at it. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Think that'll be on the tour is another one. And the last one that I've got, which is probably a good way to cap off the quotes section, is Dr. Grant, my dear Dr. Sattler, welcome to Jurassic Park. So good.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool.
So, so good.
One of the
few times in cinema where it's actually a cool thing to actually say the title of your film.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice. That's pretty cool. And there was another film reference in this. Actually, I'll say my reference, then we have to catch you up on your reference that you made between Ex Machina and Jurassic
Park.
And
this film.
Yes.
That's right.
Okay, so my reference was, it's arguably another quote, but I can't remember. I didn't write it down. It's when the cars are going into the park for the very first time and the gigantic doors to Jurassic Park open and Malcolm, Jeff Goldblum's character, he looks at the doors and remarks and he goes, oh, what are they keeping in there? And immediately I'm thinking, you idiot, you know the dinosaurs. What are they keeping there? King Kong.
Well, he doesn't know that. At that point, they don't know that they're going to see actual dinosaurs.
But they already saw the eggs hatching. Like, they know.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yeah. This is
have
after
they. Oh, they have two. Yeah, I thought it was. Yeah, true. Okay, fair enough.
All right. Oh, you've got your reference. I also want to talk one more thing about Tim. One little thing about Tim.
Go.
We'll do that and then your reference. All right. I wanted to mention that this little boy, poor thing, how old is he? Like 11, 10? He has had in the space of 24 hours, like 5 near-death experiences. He's in a car that falls off what looks like a 20 or 30 meter ledge. He nearly gets eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex. He falls through the air in a vehicle, gets stuck in a tree, climbs out of the tree. The car almost falls on him, not once, but twice. Then he survives electrocution from 10,000 volts of power pulsing through his body. And then another dinosaur encounter, the raptor nearly eats him in the kitchen when he goes into the freezer room and falls over. Luckily, raptor also slid. And then the skeleton right at the end falls on top of him, but the rib cage bridges him. That's 7 times that this poor little kid has nearly died. And he didn't scream as much as his sister.
No.
Wow. What a tough little soul.
Yeah, he would have had years of trauma therapy paid for by his very rich grandfather after this experience, I'd imagine.
Yes.
Years and years.
Yeah. All right, let's...
Awesome.
Let's go to your connection.
Yeah, so for the... We didn't get any responses, so I don't know whether I should reveal it or not. And maybe we can get someone in the comments of this episode to see if they know it. What do you think?
Oh, I don't know. We could be waiting a while. And you're not going to get another chance to mention it.
All right. So there is a, yeah, there is a link between this film and the episode that we did a couple ago of Ex Machina. And it is to do with the shaving cream, for those not in the know. So the can of shaving cream that Nedry uses in this film is the same brand as what is used by Donald Gleason in Ex Machina as a direct reference to Jurassic Park.
You reckon it was done on purpose like that?
Yes.
Yeah? Oh, yep. Okay, cool. Then
absolutely,
I will allow it.
Sci-fi, yeah, sci-fi film that that changed cinema forever. Mm. Absolutely, Jurassic Park. That is Ex Machina will do so as well in the future.
And what's the name of that that feat, that the technique, the film technique? Because you said it's the, you know, that shaving cream can.
Yes.
Is a mechanism for storytelling.
Oh, it's a MacGuffin.
A MacGuffin. Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, but although this, I don't think it could be called a MacGuffin in this film because it's not something that the characters are, it's not a plot device. It's not making the plot go forward. It's just there. If the movie had have gone in a way of like, oh, Dennis has stolen this thing, we need to get it back, and then that was the adventure.
Yeah.
Then it would be a MacGuffin. But no, so it wouldn't fall into that category. Not like the suitcase in Pulp Fiction, for example, is a MacGuffin. Okay. All the characters are trying to get it.
Oh, okay.
The orb in Guardians of the Galaxy that I have.
Is that what was in the suitcase?
Behind me here.
Is that what's in the suitcase, the Pulp Fiction
This
suitcase?
Is what was in the suitcase in Pulp Fiction. Yeah, it's very, very widely known cinematic facts. If you didn't know that, then shame.
There you go, everyone on podcasts. You need to now watch the YouTube because you'll finally see what's in the Pulp Fiction suitcase. Okay, I thought, okay, MacGuffin, that's a term that you told me about a few weeks ago, and I thought, oh, that's cool. I will forget it again. I will ask you again.
That's fine. We will definitely bring it up when we go into our Pulp Fiction discussion at some point in the very near future.
I have to say one more thing. I'm so sorry. One more thing. And it's about Williams. Williams. What's the music
John person? Williams.
John Williams' name. The credits have that music all the way through them. All the way through. And at the very, very, very end of the credits, this beautiful piece of music that's so majestic and joyful and uplifting and inspiring has a couple of extremely dark and ominous notes right at the end, really turning and, you know, pointing to a sequel. I wonder if they'll make a sequel.
To this film? Yeah, I don't know. I guess it was successful enough. We'll just have to wait and see.
We'll write to Steve-O and see if he's got any anything else.
If you're free.
But I thought that was cool. I've started watching films right through to the end of the credits. I usually do watch credits, but now I actually really watch them and listen to the music. And well, that's pretty much it. I always do it anyway. But I watch right till it goes black. And that was an interesting thing to go right to the end.
A lot of films like this with those, you know, big composers like your Zimmers and Williams and Giacchino's, like, they'll have specifically tailored pieces of music for the credits. Mm. So like you're doing yourself a disservice by not watching them and listening to them. Yeah,
it's part of the film.
To the end of the credits, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now before we add the film to the calendar, would you like to reveal what is on your t-shirt?
Oh, I was gonna save that, but all right. Fine.
Yeah, we can wait. Fine. It's fine.
No, I'll do it. Okay, look, this film really focuses on dinosaurs. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to bring the focus to something that is more... It's so stupid. It's not even a real dinosaur. Real. Okay, ready?
I haven't seen this, by the way.
I reckon you've seen it. It's Trogdor the Burninator. There you go. That's it. If you know who this is, you will really appreciate it. And if you don't know who it is, you'll think I'm an idiot. Go Google it. It's so stupid. This early 2000s internet animation. It was the closest thing I could think of that I own that resembles dinosaur.
It's better than what I had going. I've got nothing happening here.
And I was actually wearing it today. I wore it today.
Oh, classic.
So I'll keep it on. I won't change out of my my day shirt and put my movie cal shirt on. Trogdor, cool. I'm dinosaur embodiment. Because dragons are like ancient, right? dinosaur times.
Oh, yeah, very historically accurate creatures.
Yeah, especially this one.
Dragons.
This one has like a muscle man arm and little wings and stick figure legs, and he breathes fire. That's it.
Welcome to the movie calendar, everyone. If it's your first time here, it's that's Terrence and I'm Lee, and we are
hashtags. Hashtags. Oh no! In our thing and everything.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. And we know we'll never see you again. So thank you. Might as well say it now because you won't see us ever again. We appreciate the time that you've spent with us, genuinely. But don't go away just yet, because it is the main show is about to start. The moment we've all been waiting for. It is time to add Jurassic Park to the movie calendar. Mm-hmm. We have chosen a date for this film to be watched every single year, so that if you're on that day, you don't know what to watch, you can open up the movie calendar and you'll see Jurassic Park, and you'll be able to find it on a streaming service of your choice, or you know, buy it, rent it, however you can get your hands on it legally. Yeah. And you can give it a watch.
Yeah.
And the date that we have chosen for Steven Spielberg's Jurassic Park is June 11th.
June 11?
Yes.
I thought you said June 7. Oh, no, June 11.
Yeah, June 11.
Okay, good. Did you see the fear in Lee's eyes?
No. Like, in your eyes.
Really?
No, so we were tossing up between either the 7th. Or the 11th.
Or the 15th. Or the 1st.
Yeah, but we couldn't do the 1st because Moonlight is already
exactly. There. So June 11.
June 11. And the reason why it is on that date is because whilst it's not explicitly said in the film, this film obviously does happen in real time in 1993 and happens on certain days. And June 11th is the date in which all of our heroes end up on Isla Nublar.
How do you know that?
So, yeah. Sad luck, because it is in the novel, Michael Crichton says so I'll believe him.
Yep, that's good.
So, yeah, June 11th is when everybody arrives on the island and chaos and adventure ensues.
Now, I was researching when International Dinosaur Day falls, and I thought this would be cool, and we were discussing it before the episode, and I agree with June 11 being the perfect day because International Dinosaur Day actually falls twice in the year. One of the days is June 1st. We already have a film on June 1st, so we couldn't do that. But the other day is not a static day. It's the third Tuesday of every May. So that's not... We're not going to do that. It's not a fluctuating day. But know that, you know, International Dinosaur Day has 2 days of the year. June 1st is one of them. But you know what? I think this is more fitting to the story and to a film that I guess... brought cinematic technology and techniques and expectations to a new level. Quite fitting to put it on this date, I think, anyway.
Yeah,
and so did
I agree. Yeah, we concur this week, which is nice.
Yeah, we do. We do concur all the time anyway. But
for the most part,
it's one of the first times where we've actually had quite a few different dates to each other. For different reasons.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll come up. And we don't want to do that every week. We would want your contribution. So if there's going to be a film that we're talking about in the future, please let us know if you have a date for it. If you have any films that you want us to talk about, send us an email, tweet at us, hit us up on Instagram, jump onto our website. There are all ways that you can reach out. Let us know what films you want us to talk about. Let us know what dates you want them to occur. Give us a good story as to why. And you could just get lucky.
Yeah.
Now, next week's film, we haven't really decided on at this point in time.
No.
Because we were too eager to jump into the episode. There are a few films that we've got percolating at the moment for the month of October. So what we might do is we'll either do an edit here, have a discussion, and then insert it in, or we will put it in the comments or announce it on Twitter or Instagram. If you want to follow us along, I'll leave it up to Terrence's guys. But for now, we might end the episode. Thank you so much.
Why don't we have a little discussion?
Yeah, well, we'll do that after I end the show and then we can put it in.
Fine.
That's how editing works.
I can edit things.
You've ruined the movie magic now.
Oh, man. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, let's finish. And then we'll...
No, well, it's ruined now, so we may as well.
Oh, you're one of those people. Fine. Yep, let's keep doing it.
What film did you want to do next week? And we're back. For you, it was no time at all. For us, we had a deliberation for about 6 hours. But we are here now.
It's tomorrow.
We know what film we're going to do next. So at the beginning of October, we thought October is a really good month to do some spooky things. So we want to kick off the month with a horror, but also end the month with a horror as well. So the one that we're going to be ending the month with will be Jordan Peele's directorial debut, Get Out. Such an incredible film. If you haven't seen it, giving you lots of time now between this episode dropping and that one to give it a watch and really absorb it before we talk about it, because it is sensational.
Cool. I have not seen that.
So give Terrence plenty of time to see it as well.
Better not be scary. I hate scary films.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, it's not scary. This will be one for the kids. It'll be fine.
Cool.
The middle episodes, we don't know yet. We'll have a discussion. We'll probably throw some lighter ones in there as well. We don't want to do an entire month of horror. We've got to save them up. We've got Octobers to go for years to come with the movie calendar. But to kick off October for the movie calendar, we're going to do a film which has been on my shame list for so long, my catch-up list, and I haven't seen it. Oh. And I need an excuse to do it. So this is the moment. This is the opportunity. And it is going to be The Shining.
Yes, I've seen this. And this is definitely, 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 definitely a placeholder on the calendar. A placeholder? It's going to hold a place. And I'm so glad I've seen this and you haven't. I can't wait to see your reactions to this.
The roles are reversed.
Can't wait to get into it, Kubrick. It's his first film on the calendar. Really cool. It'll be our second Jack Nicholson film. Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
All right.
So good. So yeah, Departed was our first one. I'm sure I couldn't think of which one we did.
Departed. So The Shining is going to be the next film we do.
Yep.
We'll tell you what the next ones after that will be, but October will end with Get Out.
We are trying to go on a release schedule of having episodes drop on a Thursday. That's super hard to do at the moment. It's all very bit loosey-goosey, but that will hopefully be what happens going forward in years to come. Hopefully we can start to generate some more interest in the podcast in the future, mm-hmm. Which would be super cool. And so if we do a Thursday release schedule this year for October, there are 5 Thursdays. So if we do 5 episodes, we'll end with Get Out. Otherwise, if we can't squeeze it, we'll do the 4 and the 4th one will be Get Out. But we don't know what the 2 in the middle will be. But get ready for The Shining. Give it a watch, just like I will this week. And then we will see you here for episode 18.
Yeah, cool. There was so much in Jurassic Park we didn't talk about. Comment below. Tell us some cool things. But we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Terrence.
Cool.
And,
thanks.
We'll see you for The Shining.
Beauty. See you.
Bye.